Today we speak with legendary jazz saxophonist Jimmy Heath, who will be appearing with his brother, drummer Tootie Heath, as part of the Kimmel Center's Jazz Up Close series on October 15th. His recently published autobiography, I Walked with Giants, tells the story of his background and stellar career and the legendary jazz musicians he knew and played with. Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, John Coltrane, Herbie Hancock, Sonny Rollins, and many others of similar ilk dot the career of this celebrated jazz musician. He has mentored and supported the new generation and has been awarded the title of Jazz Master by the National Endowment of the Arts. Joining me today are jazz hosts here at WRTI, Bob Perkins and Maureen Molloy. We'd all like to welcome you, Jimmy Heath, to Crossover.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's really a wonderful pleasure and an honor, I must say, to meet you this way. I've heard, of course, heard you playing in through the years, my kind of jazz that I grew up with. And I guess we want to talk to you about your life. And, of course, you're going to be appearing at the Kimmel Center. And, you know, we just want to talk a little bit about your book as well, which is really quite fascinating. So much information in there, so many names, so many people that you know in your lifetime, a wonderful lifetime of music. So let's start a little bit, I guess, from the beginning, in a sense. I mean, you and your brothers were all musicians. Your parents kind of played musical instruments, too, didn't they?
Well, my father played the clarinet, and mom sang in the church choir. That's it.
That was it, and you just picked up what instrument was it? The saxophone? Was that
you
liked?
We were each offered an instrument of our choice in the family, and I took the alto saxophone.
Why, because it looked pretty, or...?
No, because it sounded pretty.
Yeah, but you probably couldn't do too much with it, could you?
And my some of the people who I admired.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that young people go, you know, they're drawn to the saxophone because of the way it looks, and it's kind of cool, and it's that's what really brings it to them. But in terms of playing, how did you approach this? I mean, did you study at all, and seriously?
Yes, I studied. You can't play the saxophone without studying it.
Well, I mean, in terms of the teachers that you had and so on.
Well, I had a private teacher in Philadelphia, a man by the name of Mr. Terry. That's all I knew about him. He could play, and he showed me the beginnings and helped me to get started. And later on, I took different kinds of lessons, orchestration and other lessons. You know, but I didn't go to an institution that taught music.
Well, you went to the institution of some of the great musicians that were around, I guess. And you played. You started playing very, very early with a band as well, didn't you?
Oh, my mentors. And, you know, people helped each other out then. You know, and I had the great around the Giants that I mentioned in the book.
Yes.
And they all were teachers. They tell you something every time you get with them, Dizzy, and people like that.
Now, you knew Bob very, very well. You were kind of neighbors, weren't you?
Yeah, well, Bob and my brother Tootie, who's also going to be on the gig on the 15th, he's the drummer in our family. They were running up and down the streets together. I was a little older.
Yeah, I remember those days well, Jim. And and you and Tootie, especially Tootie, always kidding me about being hit by the funeral director's car.
Yeah, you
they see, almost got me. They almost got me. I got away clean. I think I was about 9 or 8, and Tootie and I were spinning tops in the street. I know you know the story well. And this great big LaSalle with the spare tires embedded in the fenders. I think it weighed about 500,000 pounds. It looked that big anyway.
It saved you. You didn't get inside the funeral car.
No, that I remember the funeral director well, Miss White and Mr. Black. Black and White funeral home.
Yeah, right. I remember that.
Yeah, Mr. Black married a Miss White, and they called it the Black and White funeral home. And they almost got old BP. But I stopped just before that Lawrence LaSalle clipped me, but I did fall forward and cut my chin on the license plate. I think I got about 9 or 10 stitches or something like that. Got to stay home from school and eat ice cream.
Yeah, I recall. But, you know, that's because you and Tootie, my brother, were, you know, younger than I.
Yeah.
He and Percy were already into trying to get into music ahead of my brother Tootie, since he's 9 years younger than I am.
Yeah. Jim, looking back in retrospect, you're 84, I think, years young. And you look back, would you do it all again?
Some things, playing music and getting into music, there's some things that I did I wouldn't do again. But that's everybody's life. There are ups and downs in a life as long as mine. I'll be 85 on the 25th of this month.
Mm-hmm. You have had really an outstanding career with one who has not gone, as you mentioned, to conservatory, you know, colleges and different institutions like that, to be able to do what you do, multi-instrumentalist, arranger, composer, band leader, and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Well, I taught at the Aaron Copland School of Music here in New York for 10 years. You know, a master's in jazz performance program. So I've covered a lot of territory, having not the opportunities of some others. Since I came up when it was a lot of segregation, separate but not equal schools, mm-hmm. and all of the above.
That's a whole issue that, of course, that one has to go through. And you also played in bands when you were very young. How was that, you know, in terms of, you know, seeing life from that vantage point?
Mom didn't want me to go to Omaha, Nebraska and leave home and go on the road and play music. But I stayed out there about almost a year and played in dance bands. It's an education.
Yeah.
Every time you put the horn in your mouth and practice or play, you're learning something. Environment is such that you learn from others.
Of course, but you said also when you were teaching, I mean, I am a classical musician by training, and I've learned so much. I love jazz through the years, but music is music, and I guess that the great thing about jazz that is so creative is the improvisation, but you can't just start playing like that, can you? I mean,
you have to go through certain disciplines to get to that. You know, when you talk about classical or jazz, which I call African-American classical music, you know, people say, well, how did you do it without... Sometimes it's done... I mean, who did it for Stevie Wonder?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think...
He couldn't even read music.
Yeah, but...
He could write it and hear it. And the rest is history.
But there is music is music, of course, and it makes sense. I mean, it's obviously a discipline that you have to learn, and beyond that, you become the creative jazz musician that you are. And when you teach your young jazz musicians, how do you go about that? Do they come to you with knowledge of music? You know,
the
essentials. Yeah,
at Queens College, mm-hmm. It was a master's in jazz performance, so they were undergrads when they came to the Aaron Copland School at Queens College. And I had been performing and teaching and learning for many years before I got that position. And the people there at the college accepted me on my life's work.
Well, of course, yes. But it doesn't just happen. I mean, this is when you teach.
It's unusual.
Maureen.
Yes, and Mr. Heath, you were just saying that you and Jill were just discussing, you know, that you have to learn different things before you're able to move on and teach others. Just like the group of musicians that you played with, and going through the book, one of the parts that I actually really enjoyed a lot was when you were talking about when Miles Davis was recording So What, and you were going to do a recording with Miles, but the modal jazz wasn't exactly your thing. I mean, obviously you had to learn to do it anyway. During that time, when you were going from playing in a lot of big bands and just doing a lot of charts to moving on to this whole different thing, it had to be a whole different learning experience. How did you deal with that?
Well, first of all, I didn't record So What with Miles.
But to tour.
I went with him after he had recorded, after Coltrane quit. I went back with Miles. I had been with Miles before I got into a problem and went away. And when I came back, I joined Miles again. But, you know, I had been, by that time, I had been studying music for many years. And I just wasn't accustomed to the modal playing. I was playing by chordal progressions like songs that had an ending, a final cadence, and things like that. So I could do that. But the modal thing was brand new to me. And I was able to adjust to it playing with Miles.
Well, you know, of course, again, you're speaking music, and that's where we all come from here. How do you feel about jazz today? I mean, what happened? What happened
to
jazz?
Well, you know, there are a lot of very talented young jazz musicians that are coming through the institutional process, and they will find a way. We had to find a way. Jazz was never the number one music of the world. And we had to find our own way in our music. I just did, when I came over there, I walked and showed some of the places where jazz was performed in Philly to promote this gig at Kimmel Center. And they videoed me at where Peps used to be, the Showboat. You know, there were 15 or 20 clubs and dance halls where jazz was played in Philadelphia. Philadelphia was the one of the meccas of jazz. New York was first, and then Philadelphia. You know, so all of that has to do with the atmosphere and what was happening during that time. And now the same thing is happening in institutions. I did a lecture last night up at Columbia University about music and my history.
How do you approach that when you're talking to non-musicians about your career?
Well, this happened to be musicians, the musical, students. If it's non-musicians, I approach them by talking about my experience in life. Life experience, everybody has that, not just musicians.
And it's part of the journey. It's a big part of how you turned into what you've turned into.
Yes, I mean, I've been in it a long time, and there are pitfalls, and there are, I'm smelling the aroma of the roses now. You know, I just took a picture with the president as a member of the Thelonious Monk. Board trustees of the Thelonious Monk Institute that's been going 25 years. We just had a gala in Washington, and I was privileged to meet with the president. And, I've met and played with on the White House along with Bill Clinton.
I was just going to ask you about Bill Clinton because he's a saxophone player.
Yeah, well, you know. And I'm getting an award from the mayor of New York on the 1st of November. I've already gotten the state of New York when Governor Pataki was in. I mean, awards and things like that are coming my way as a professional. And the thing with the mayor here is with Mikhail Baryshnikov and Stephen Sondheim, and yours truly.
How is that coming together? What is that? Is that you?
That's
you're part
the
of that
mayor,
the awards ceremony?
An artistic award.
Oh,
on
isn't
November
that amazing?
1st.
It for a man of your stature in music, and especially jazz music. How are things as far as work is concerned? Is it pretty steady for? Or Jimmy Heath, sometime with local people and people who don't have your credentials,
well,
the work is kind of sketchy.
Everybody's not starting at this level, but there are young people who work all the time because they're very talented. You know, they, Bob, they've been saying since I was a little kid, jazz is dead. And it's not.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Roy Hargrove I play with all the time. I call him Hard Groove. Roy Hargrove. I mean, you know, there are people who are very talented, and they are finding a way. He has three bands, a hip-hop band, a jazz quintet, and a big band. Everybody is still, it's still happening. This is the Mecca, though, New York is.
But you talk.
I'm going to Serbia in November, and I've never been there.
Is that part of a tour?
Yeah, but I'm after going to Florida at the University of Northern Florida, and I'm heading for Serbia, coming back and playing in Flushing, Queens. See, but I'm an old pro, so I can get gigs. What you're talking about is the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finding a way also. But they, you know, they have to, you have to crawl before you walk.
But you have, I think it's the forward, part of the forward to your book is Wynton Marsalis. Wynton Marsalis is a classical musician. I mean, to start with, that was his training. And then, of course, he's really into this whole, the development of the jazz, you know, ensemble through Juilliard and, of course, the club as well at Lincoln Center. But, he's a perfect example of a classical musician who really took it so seriously and then decided he had to make a choice. And, of course, he made his choice.
Father wasn't a classical musician as such, Ellis Marsalis. So he had jazz in his background too, but his father wanted him to study the trumpet in a classical fashion. Wynton decided after he won three or four Grammys for classical music, then he decided he was going to play African-American classical music. And that's what he's done, and he's presented himself excellently. I went with him when they built the building. He commissioned me to do a piece when the new Lincoln Center Jazz building opened. And I know Wynton. In fact, he took one lesson from me on orchestration. And now I tell him, as they went, and I got to take a lesson from you.
Well, he's very ambitious, too. I mean, he's
very
really
talented.
Ambitious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's very,
very
dedicated.
Yeah.
Jimmy, you live in a... a very historic part of town in Queens, Corona. It's almost like an artist colony, but there are also some other folk who are not in music there, that dignitaries also. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I met the Attorney General of the United States you're talking about. He's from right over here in Queens near me, but also... one of the number one jazz personalities ever. The house is about seven blocks from me, and that's Louis Armstrong's house.
Oh, my.
Cannonball and Clark Terry lived here where I live now, in the Dory Miller Co-op, which is he's a World War hero. Adam Clayton Powell built this place here, where I live, and I've been here. You know, so... Queens, they have a thing called the Queens Jazz Trail, and they tell you everybody that lived in Queens, instead of Tony Bennett, and a lot of people came out of Queens. Ben Webster lived out here, Illinois Jacquette, Dizzy lived over near Louis Armstrong, Charlie Shea. It's a wonderful atmosphere here.
I met a neighbor of yours. She said she was a neighbor anyway. She just completed a book on Lewis's wife, on Pop's wife.
Yeah.
Your neighbor, Miss Carter?
Karen Kennedy.
Karen Kennedy Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a neighbor of yours.
Yeah. She lives in the co-op.
Ah, okay. Great.
Well, again, I think they also lived in Queens because Manhattan was very expensive. So a lot of people moved out to Queens at that time, many, many years ago. That was
one reason, I agree. But there was another reason. When I left for South Philly with the row houses, I wanted to come to Queens and put my children to school here because of trees.
Yes.
Queens was a more, rural urban combination.
so much to talk to you about, and we really would love to go on and on and on. All I can say is you are a phenomenal musician, and your book is really fascinating. I mean, it's just, you don't know where to start. You can pick it up and open it at any page, and there's a name of some terribly, terribly important and amazing musician whom you have not only rubbed shoulders with, but worked with and known so intimately. And we thank you for giving us this time, and we look forward to seeing you when you play at the Kimmel Center. And I know both Bob and Maureen join me in congratulating you on a tremendously productive life, and live longer and keep giving to us your wonderful talent.
And I would love to see you at the concert if possible. I'm going to bring a surprise guest, a trombonist who's, I don't know, he must be in his 20s. In fact, we have some youngsters in my band, and Trudy and I do, and they are excellent musicians. And well, that's our purpose in life, is to bring the young ones on board.
Well, that's wonderful, and you're, as I say, a mentor to learn from and to really admire. And thanks again, Jimmy Heath, for coming to WRTI for these few minutes.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Work on another 84, Jim.
I'm trying.
Take care, Jimmy.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.